Hello, and welcome to the first episode of Deep Dive. This is a new bi-monthly show dedicated to having honest conversations about issues of concern to social workers. My name is Mona Lisa Earle, and I am the host of this podcast series. This podcast was born out of important discussions held in reflective sessions with social workers, all of whom are trained volunteer coaches and the Social Work Professional Support Service. This service provides free and confidential coaching to social workers across the UK. As the lead trainer and supervisor for the service, my experience in social work spans well over 30 years and across many roles, both in the UK and the US. In this first podcast episode, which is titled Speaking Our Truth, Social Workers Opening Up About the Psychological Impact of Self-Harming Behavior, Suicide Ideation, Shame, Burnout, and Guilt in the Social Work Profession, I am joined today by Annie McIver, Michaela Horan, and Abby Muir. So just a little bit about each of my co-hosts today. Annie McIver is one of our volunteer coaches, and her professional background as a social worker is quite broad. In 2001, she gained an MA in consultation and the organization from the University of East London and the Tavistock Institute. In 2011, she qualified as a licensed system-centered practitioner from the System-Centered Training and Research Institute in Atlanta, Georgia, United States. That training promoted a systemic approach to working with individuals and groups. At its heart is the idea that if one approaches an issue from a systems perspective, it enables one to contextualize and reduce self-blame and blame of others. This in turn releases energy to problem solve and take up one's role in a more functional way to meet the desired goals. This is the approach that Annie uses as a coach. And since 2019, she has been working independently as a coach, a mentor, a trainer, and a consultant. My next co-host is Michaela Horan. She's also a volunteer coach in the Social Work Professional Support Service, and she has had a private coaching practice since 2015. She's a qualified social worker, a practice educator, and a facilitator for BIRD, which is an organization that specializes in providing resiliency coaching and training for those working in the nonprofit sector. In this role, Michaela has delivered workshops that promote self-care and well-being to staff teams within a range of voluntary and public sector organizations, and has also provided individual coaching to staff members. She has said that demand for resiliency coaching has increased during the lockdown period, which has given her insight into the experiences and self-care needs of individuals working to support others while negotiating the ongoing disruptions caused by the pandemic. Abby Muir, our third co-host in this episode, has over 25 years' experience spanning across adults and children's health and social care sectors. She is acknowledged for successfully implementing collaborative and effective change in often politically and culturally challenging systems, and is particularly well known for her work with local authorities and NHS mental health trusts across England in developing outcome-focused mental health services which recognize the crucial part that mental health social care plays in the delivery of effective community mental health services. I hope I got all of that right as I'm turning to my co-host here, and I think I got that all right. So we're going to get right into this conversation. We think it's a very, very important conversation for the time that we are in. So my question to each of you, I'm going to start with Michaela, centers around the sometimes implicit message that social workers should be resilient, they should be self-reliant, professional, and able to get on with their work in the face of extreme challenges. What are your thoughts on this? And does the social work profession place unrealistic expectations on social workers without enough consideration for their emotional well-being? And what can we as colleagues and coaches do about it? So Michaela is going to start us off with that, but please feel free, Annie and Abby, to jump in, ask questions, because we just really want to have an open and honest conversation. Over to you, Michaela.
Well, I mean, to answer that question simply, yes, it does. And that's from my experience, both as a social worker and also working as a practice educator with social workers at every stage of their career. It really does. That I think the conversation about the well-being of social workers has evolved in the 20 years I've been a social worker. But certainly for me, when it was at its worst, when I had three children, you know, little children at home, and I was responsible for complex child protection assessments, I did used to fantasize about having some kind of injury, like a broken leg, that would prevent me from going to work. And it was only really when I said to my husband, is this normal to feel this way? And he said, no, it's not normal.
Of course not.
And having a colleague disclose that she almost wished a long-term illness on herself that would require treatment and prevent her from going to work. And that this wasn't uncommon.
But it wasn't okay. That's wild to even hear, number one. And even wilder to really imagine ourselves in such a position that we're thinking again about self-harming in order to, in some very strange way, fix our situation. That's just really, it's really sad as well.
And it reflects I think at the time, and this is going back about 10 years, that conversation just wasn't really being had. There was a culture that felt like a culture of machismo and one-upmanship and kind of sharing your war stories with each other. But there wasn't a sense of the impact that it was having on us all. And I think that's why then it was being kind of expressed by me and my colleagues, certainly, but I'm sure we weren't the only ones, in a dysfunctional way.
Indeed. I certainly agree with that. And when we pull out those elements of trauma, frankly, stress, anxiety, we as social workers, and correct me if I'm wrong, folks, but as social workers, again, there is that expectation that we do not talk about the thoughts we have around suicide ideation and self-harm. There's shame, guilt, embarrassment. I'll turn to Annie. Your response to that really, I think, a worrying and provocative statement that Michaela made.
Yes, and it's very shocking when Michaela says it, and yet it's very recognizable when she says it too. And I kind of find myself wondering, well, is it any different now? And I think in some places potentially it is. And through our work as volunteer coaches, we also know that in some places it's not. And they're coming to talk to us because it's the one place they can come and find a safe space to have a conversation. And often what social workers are talking about is the societal context also that social work operates in. So that, they're saying the context is really hostile, and I'm really scared that I'll get blamed if a vulnerable child or a vulnerable adult on my caseload dies. And when that's coupled with high caseloads, when you don't always have your notes up to date, or you feel you don't have everything wrapped up nicely, then that generates a huge amount of stress and tension, and that impacts on well-being. So I just wanted to draw out the kind of media context, the political context, which is blame, name and shame. And, you know, until we can start asking, or society can start asking, not, you know, asking rather than who do we blame, what can we learn, until that shift happens, then I think there's a very strong push for social work and social workers to take on all of this responsibility on behalf of society and feel it very personally when inevitably things go wrong.
Very powerful response to that. And I want to turn to Abby for a moment and unpack this a little bit more, because even talking about this in this episode, this first podcast episode, produces within me a bit of anxiety on a couple of levels. As you know, a trainer, a coach, a manager, and all of those things, it is so difficult to push aside the expectation so that I can see my own truth, or so others can see my own truth. And certainly the coaching service that we provide, as Annie mentioned, we are more and more coming into contact with our colleagues, our peers, who are, I think, in roundabout ways saying, I am in serious distress. Mm-hmm. Help me. And our responsibility as coaches, as volunteer coaches, is to really hear what's actually not being said. So very often we get a lot of layers in those calls, and we have to recognize what those layers are hiding. And in that regard, I want to hear what Abby has to say about that, because again, Michaela, I have an image in my head now of someone purposely wanting to break their leg in order to get out from work, to get away from work, to get away from that blame, name, and shame that Annie talked about. Abby, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I totally agree. And sadly, in my experience, I mean, I've been a social worker now, as you said, for over 25 years. And I really do see time and time again that the social workplace at the moment, still now, you know, it just gives total disregard to social workers' mental health needs, sadly. And I've heard of too many cases of social workers who they've recognised the early signs of mental health within themselves. They've approached their managers and asked for, you know, reduced caseloads or changes in their working week, only to be told that actually, no, you know, sorry, this, you know, this can't be accommodated. And actually, you need to go back to the drawing board and you need to consider your own prioritization and workload management skills. You know, and that's a harmful and toxic culture. And, you know, really, you know, as social workers, if we're expected to care for others, why can't we then sort of care for ourselves without this sort of, you know, name and sort of shame and blame culture that's going on? And if we can't have compassion for our own struggles, then how on earth are we then able to extend that emotional capacity to somebody else? It doesn't make any sense to me. And, you know, really interestingly, there was a recent research study undertaken just last year that actually evidenced that social workers, you know, who are providing, you know, support and care to people, you know, in a high level of distress themselves, they themselves, the social workers, are at risk of developing compassion fatigue, which in turn leads to poor mental health. So it says it all, really. And in my opinion, not enough is being done in the workplace to support social workers' mental health. I think firstly and foremostly, the culture, this, you know, this shame and blame culture needs to change. And also the stigma around mental health, that poor mental health is seen as a personal and professional weakness. You know, it needs to change.
But going back to Michaela, thank you for that, Abby. Going back to Michaela, why is it accepted that the people we work with, the families, the children, young people, and families that we work with, why is it accepted that we engage with them to reduce their anxiety and stress, but we are not expected to look outside of ourselves for help, for that same help? Why does there seem to be an expectation that we take on the trauma, we take on the stress? It's sort of like we are the repository for everyone else's trauma and stress, yet we have no release other than, I suppose, systems such as what we've established with the social work professional support service. But that's in its infancy. It's been going for about 18 months now since the pandemic. But it's not enough. We need to have these really honest conversations where there's no punches pulled. So take us through how you engage with the research, how you engage with conferences or whatever it is that you go to unpack these difficult subjects.
Well, I mean, I think I'm really interested in the application of the concept of moral injury to social work, which is a concept that comes from the military. And I think that speaks to, you know, the level that we're talking about. And it's the, you know, when you have to engage in actions that violate your moral or ethical code, you are harmed, you are injured by that experience on a moral level. And it's become more prevalent in relation to the pandemic and healthcare workers. But it absolutely, when you look at that definition, it absolutely applies to what social workers do as well. And it definitely raises a question about, you know, what is the support we need as professionals to heal and recover from the injuries we acquire in the line of our work? And what could that look like? And what should that look like?
So this idea, Annie, of moral injury, that's a very, very powerful phrase, if you will, and certainly the meaning behind it. About psychological distress, but there's physical distress that goes along with that as well. As social workers, we are indeed, to use a military term, in the front line. We are in the trenches. And oftentimes, in fact, with increasing frequency because of the pandemic, social workers are being physically harmed. It's more than a moral injury. I think it's a moral panic that we are being pulled into.
Yes, I mean, I think that's an interesting, concept, moral injury, moral panic. And I was just thinking as you were speaking about if we took a trauma lens to organizations, took a trauma lens to the individual staff. We've got staff working. We're really comfortable talking about trauma and other people in our client group. I think we're generally pretty poor about talking about the impact of secondary trauma on us and on a workforce. And I really don't think as a profession we are yet, I think we're starting, but we haven't yet really got to examining the role of, for example, supervision with a trauma lens. You know, what does it mean for an organisation to be thinking about their workforce as experiencing secondary trauma? And I found the work of Yvonne Agazarian, theorist and group analyst, who talks very coherently about living human systems, us biologically, physiologically, as people, and the impact upon us when we are in traumatic situations, the fight, flight, freeze responses, and the way that that impacts on us in taking up our role, how it impacts on our minds, our thinking capacity, our bodies, our stress. So I think we are really at a point where in coaching, this is a very live subject. People are coming with, you know, heads that they feel are really hard to engage in their work. They're stressed out, and bodies that are really stressed. They're off sick. They're feeling burnt out. So I really see ourselves as being in a place potentially as the PSS where we can really ignite this conversation around a trauma-informed perspective and lens on resilience and well-being.
Thank you for that. Well said. What was going through my mind as you were speaking, and perhaps the same for Abby and Michaela, was the fix that social workers have designed for themselves. It's not a good fix, is we leave the profession. We just leave.
Yeah.
And hopefully we're not going to the extreme of breaking our leg or, you know, just flipping out. We're hopefully not going to that extreme, but I think we are. And I think that we're simply not comfortable talking about that because it's seen as a shameful thing to admit. Decades ago, seeing a therapist was a shameful thing to do. It's no longer the case. Nevertheless, shame comes in layers and it comes in different contexts. And that body-mind fit doesn't necessarily apply to us. The other unfortunate thing, and I think I'll let Abby have the last word, is these episodes are only 30 minutes long, and we're coming very quickly to the end of our conversation. I think they need to be longer, but hopefully people will be engaged in what we want to say and have to say. There are many other topics that we will be covering in these episodes. So a lot of things to do with LGBTQ youth in the system and impact on them, Black, Asian, and minority ethnic issues that we're finding in the profession. So we're looking to cover quite a range of topics that we may not necessarily be talking about in our workplace with one another. We certainly try and encourage those sorts of conversations, again, in the social work professional support service when our colleagues call into our volunteer coaches for private, confidential, safe spaces where we hear these sorts of things and we have to figure out collectively as a profession, what are we actually going to do about this other than talk about it? Abby, quickly, you're going to have the last word here. So take us out to the end of the session.
Okay. Yes, thanks, Mona Lisa. And I think what's become really apparent is that employers of social workers, they need to actually take a look at what the private sector are doing, you know, regarding mental health. I mean, you know, the private sector for several years now have invested heavily within mental health initiatives, you know, such as, you know, greater flexibility around working, mental health days, mental health champions, so that staff members can, you know, go and speak to a mental health champion within the workplace confidentially. And, you know, mental health is seen as paramount, you know, good mental health is seen as paramount. And perhaps, you know, this is what needs to be implemented, in my opinion, of those that employ social workers. So thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for that. And on the back of that, well-being plans, folks. We need to have well-being plans in local authorities so that social workers have a place to go and something to draw on. So thanks to all of you. Again, listeners, join us for other episodes of the podcast. And hopefully this has been useful and helpful to everyone. So good wishes to all. If what we have discussed here today applies to any of you who are listening, please seek out help through your GP or access the counseling or therapeutic resources in your area. Thanks for listening.